Hi, I'm Sean Duggan, and welcome to The Fix, a podcast about Lightroom, Photoshop, post-processing, and the cool and creative things we get to do with our images after the shoot. On this week's show, my guest is photographer, author, and photo educator Brian Matiash, and we're going to be talking about something that's not really related to post-processing per se, although certainly post-processing can be a very important component of that. But we're going to be talking about defining your personal photographic style. We're also going to be taking a look at Brian's latest Living on the Edge venture, the very first live daily Facebook show devoted to photography and the tech surrounding it. It's going to be a really interesting conversation, so stay with us. Well, thanks for tuning in and joining me, everybody out there in internet land. Thanks for stopping by my corner of thisweekinphoto.com. Very pleased this week to have my guest, Brian Matiash, with me. Hey, Brian, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Sean. How you doing?
I am doing well, and I'm glad that you can join me live from Portland, Oregon here. Although I should clarify that, because although you are certainly live as you and I are talking, this is not a live broadcast, which you know a lot about these days. So tell us a little bit about your latest project, which has debuted on the interwebs in the last week or so.
Sure. Well, and obviously, thank you so much, Sean, for having me on. It's always fun to kind of be part of these TWIP broadcasts. So so basically I've been kind of going heads down, like full speed ahead with building a what's called a photo show on Facebook Live. So Facebook Live is not necessarily a total like a terribly new platform. It's been around for at least 6 months, but for the most part, you were limited to broadcasting from your phone. And then a couple weeks ago at Facebook's F8 conference, they opened up Facebook Live to other kind of third parties. They opened up their API. And so I did some quick and dirty research of how can I broadcast a higher quality, you know, show using my Sony A7 cameras and, you know, graphics and stuff, as opposed to just kind of like staring at my phone type of thing.
Right.
So yeah, I mean, it's been an adventure. I've done five episodes so far, five daily episodes, and it's live kind of like this. And then, you know, it's Facebook records it and then keeps the archive in posterity so you can watch it after. But Facebook limits you to 720p, like half HD resolution. So I also, while I'm broadcasting live, the app I use also records a 1080p copy, which I upload to YouTube. So while it's technically a Facebook Live show, much like how you can watch the Daily Show live on Comedy Central, I don't have cable, so I watch it on Hulu. So I make it available at different kind of mediums, but it's all online.
Right, yeah.
And it's been a learning experience.
I'm sure it has. You know, I've caught, I think, three of the episodes, and I've seen how your camera setup has evolved. Now you're doing two cameras, which is really great, you know, and that provides, you know, a little bit more visually dynamic show. And also, as you pointed out, you can actually use that one camera to do close-ups of gear if you want to show something, which worked out really well.
Right.
But the other kind of cool thing that's nice is that it allows you to actually play other videos within the show, and it seems to do that pretty well and pretty seamlessly.
Yep, exactly. So that was so finding new content when it's just you. Remember, it's just me, no one else. You know, it's hard, but it becomes a little bit easier when you could supplement it with other videos. So I've tried a few different things, and I've realized the things that work and things that don't work. So the very first episode, I brought up another live stream. It was a cached live stream, so it was buffering, and I played that to show people what other people are doing. And in those situations, the software can't handle it. So there was a lag with my audio. So that's right. Let's try to remove the buffered play, and let's play a local video. So that required me to figure out how to download, say, YouTube videos. And full credit, it's still the other person's video, but with a local video, if I played that, as you saw, Sean, that plays fine. So it takes, as long as I can get the videos locally, which is kind of another, you know, I guess, step in the process, I can add that much more production value to the show.
Right. And so you're just, I mean, this is kind of geeking out on some of the technical details of this.
Right.
It's all in the purview of the theme of The Fix, which is all about post-processing and production, although, you know, we're kind of verging into, you know, your video workflow here. But so you're using a different app to record from your Sony cameras. That's sending the stream to your Mac. And then from there, it's piping it to Facebook. Is that it?
Sort of. The way it works is, so you've got your camera, so I have the A7, and then, yeah, I know we're geeking out, I'll try to make it quick.
This is a geeky show. It's okay. It's all good.
And awesome. And I kind of believe in the spirit of sharing. There's no such thing as proprietary information in art and in this realm of social media. Kind of like hiking up the skirt. This is how I do it. And so, so I have my A7 cameras, and from the camera, you have to somehow let the computer know that that is a viable video input. So there's a micro HDMI cable that goes out, and on the other side is a regular HDMI cable. And that connects to a little device, a little Black Magic device that on Amazon, I can't remember the model of it, but it's like $140. So that's how you connect the camera to this device. And then from the device to the computer, it connects via Thunderbolt. So tons of bandwidth there. So that's just the hardware side. Now you've effectively created a hardware connection between the camera and the computer. Then there's a piece of software by a company called Telestream. Now you use Camtasia. I use ScreenFlow. ScreenFlow is made by Telestream, and they also have an app called Wirecast. So within hours after the F8 conference, Telestream announced, hey, our Wirecast solution will take advantage of Facebook's live API. So it's saying you can use our Wirestream app to broadcast.
Ah, cool.
So the Wirecast solution isn't cheap. It's a $500 investment for the pro. And then if you want the studio, which has some more bells and whistles, that's another $500. So it's a grand. So for my upfront investment, because I have two camera inputs, that's two Black Magic. So that's about $260-$280 plus $500 for the software. So you're in it for about $800. Just quick, dirty math. So what that Wirecast software does is it allows me to, it has an authentication section to Facebook. So you log in with Facebook and then you say, all right, where do you want it? Do you want to go to your profile or your page? And then it allows you to put the post title and the post description. And it also allows you to specify a local recording. So kind of like what you're doing, where as I'm streaming, I'm also recording a 1080p copy locally.
Right.
Within this app. And within this app, that's where you build your show. So you're assigning the video inputs. You're saying, all right, import this offline video clip, import these graphics. So in terms of creativity, if we want to bring it back to The Fix, one of the things that I am trying to get better at every day is making better graphics. So like The Daily Show, all those little kind of graphical interstitials that come up, that's a designer that's, you know, kind of doing a quick and dirty, you know, mask and, you know, backgrounds, and they're using a lot of stock photos and stuff. So,
right.
So for me, that's a huge learning curve, because I'm not a, unlike my wife, who is is so lucky to have a great sense of design in addition to her photography. I don't have that. So,
yeah.
So yeah, it's been a trip, Sean.
Well, you know, the graphics that you referred to, like, you know, that would pop up on a news show off to the right. side of the presenter's, right. you know, head up there. Yeah. Yeah. I was really impressed with how those looked and they looked really nice and definitely added something to the show. And I thought, wow, it's really cool that you're able to put all that together. So that's with the Telestream Wirecast software. Wirecast, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. That's that. So the two components I would say that most people don't have, they probably have, well, they more likely not have a camera. The mm-hmm. camera has to have HDMI out. Mm-hmm. And that could come in the form of micro HDMI, which is usually the case. And then they need that Blackmagic streaming capture card or device. So you most likely have a camera and you most likely have a computer.
Yeah.
You need to get the capture device, which is the Blackmagic, and then the software. And there are free alternatives out there, open source software. I haven't tried them because I was stupid and didn't do my research for that beforehand. So I told Sean, in every single way possible, I put the cart in front of the horse here and kind of just like dove in head first, like, yeah, whatever, let's figure this out.
Well, you know, that's how, even though sometimes it causes some bumpy travel getting to where you want to go, I think throughout the history of innovation, that has often been the way that some, you know, great innovations have happened, where, you know, people have been, you know, whatever, enthusiastic, oh, let's get this going, and they do exactly that thing. I mean, I've done that too.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, that's kind of the litmus test that I like to perform, not the kind of overly analytical one.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's cool. So, so this is on your professional Facebook page, right?
Correct. I can broadcast to my profile, but that's against, like, I treat my social presence as a brand. It's a, I'm a brand, or
sure.
I'm mm-hmm. self-employed. And so as such, because Facebook pages are meant for brands,
yeah.
that's where I broadcast.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we'll put a link in the show notes for that. And we'll probably put a little bit of a banner there across the screen so people can see it who are watching. So that's great. And well, anyway, those of you out there in internet land, if you haven't checked that out, you definitely should. I must say that as somebody who kind of has the reins of a weekly pre-recorded podcast here at The Fix, you know, that weekly schedule is, you know, kind of just about right for me to keep track of. And I can't even imagine taking on a daily show like you're attempting to do. So kudos to you.
What's the proper response? Like something like beware what you wish for or something like that. Like there's gotta be some sort of ancient proverb that I can quote, but it has been, that's why I didn't put the word daily in the title. I just call it the photo show because it's hard, Sean. It's hard. And it's not like I'm not trying to, you know, woe is me, like, poor Brian, but
no.
I guarantee, I'm sure you, and I hope everyone out there can empathize with, but like anything you do, you want to do it well, right?
Yeah, definitely.
And you know, that could segue into the book I wrote. Like writing that book was one of the hardest decisions for me to make because I was stone cold terrified about I'm like, oh man, if I put out a book and it tanks, that's not good. So same thing with the show. If I'm going to do daily show, I want to make sure I put my best foot forward every episode. And you know what? Doing it just by yourself, everything, every single aspect of it by yourself is enormously taxing. And so, you know,
yeah,
weekly sounds really good.
Well, or every other daily show.
Exactly. The bi-daily show.
Yeah. Well, the nice thing about doing it weekly is it does give you more time to put things together, line up some guests if you want to have a guest, just like that. So yeah, you know, and plus, you know, more time for your life as well.
That, and just the, you know, to the last thing to that point. So if there are two kind of broadcasts that I model the Daily Show, the photo show off of. The first is the Daily Show. So that's currently with Trevor Noah, but that was formerly with Jon Stewart on Comedy Central. And the other one is John Oliver's show on HBO. Now that the key difference is the Daily Show is daily, obviously Monday through Friday. And John Oliver's is once a week. And so I was sitting back the other day talking with Nicole, and I was asking, so we were talking about this, the kind of what should the cadence or the frequency of the show be? And I thought about it. I'm like, you know what? If I miss an episode of The Daily Show, I'm okay. I don't care as much. I maybe care is a too kind of crass of a word, but it doesn't faze me as much. But if I miss the John Oliver show, which is once a week, I get I'm like, I need to get that because it's more of a precious commodity. Like, they're only asking for 30 minutes of my time once a week. And it's 30 minutes straight, not, you know, 22 minutes or with commercials that the Daily Show has. So that's something that I am trying to qualify, partly to kind of for my own sanity, partly for me to be able to put out an even better show. But also, like, I need to make sure that I would rather have it's the same thing with Friends. I saw one of those memes on Facebook. Like, I've got, as I get older with Friends, I would rather have 4 quarters than 100 pennies.
Yeah.
So if you kind of transmogrify that onto the broadcast world, I would rather have, say, 1 or 2 shows a week with several thousand viewers than 5 shows with 300 to 400 viewers.
Hmm. Yeah.
Anyway.
Well, and also I guess, you know, kind of hearkening back to your comparison to the John Oliver show, you know, one nice thing about that format and a format that he frequently explores is that he will go kind of in depth into a particular topic.
And yes.
And if you had a weekly show, you'd have, you know, more time to prepare and put together how you might want to go in depth into a particular topic.
Yes, exactly. And I think I just need to kind of absolve myself, not to be too sanctimonious, but like, because like there's this kind of first mover advantage. So the whole reason why I started this is because of that first mover advantage. And that happens for anyone who's kind of social savvy, that always happens to those people where if there's a new platform or a new social network, like Elo, God, like people flock with their flags. It's like that scene in Far and Away, I think the movie with Tom Cruise and Nicole Kidman.
And the land rush, right?
Exactly. Like yeah. There are other horses with their stakes.
Yeah.
And everyone's like pushing each other over, trying to outdo each other, trying to do something like without necessarily considering the ramifications. They just need to do it. So I was no different. I was very bold in saying, this is the first Facebook Live daily show. And that daily show is killing me for photography. There are other live daily shows going on right now, but no one's doing it for photography.
Hmm.
And I'm going to admit it straight up. I did it because of that kind of first mover advantage.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, it'll evolve as you find your stride with it. And, you know, you'll find a pace and a format that works, you know, well for you and that, you know, the viewers like, and, you know, I'm sure, I mean, it's off to a good start and I'm sure it'll settle in and find a good balance, you know?
Well, thanks. I mean, I appreciate that. I really do, Sean.
Cool. Well, listen, let's segue over to another topic, which is sort of like the main topic that I had initially contacted you about. And this was actually before you went live with your live show.
Right.
So I didn't know about that when I first contacted you, but I first contacted you.
I didn't either.
You didn't. Okay. Wow. You were that bleeding edge, huh?
Sean, it was like within the day I figured out everything, I placed my Amazon order, but go ahead. It was literally zero day.
I did not aware that. I thought you were just being cagey and like not like, you know, revealing what you were doing until it went live.
I said it several times. This is laboratory science. I am flying by the seat of my pants here.
All right. Well, all the more admirable and courageous of you.
Thank you. But go ahead. I'm sorry. I keep interrupting you.
No, it's okay. So anyway, yeah, you have a book out from Rocky Nook Press called The Visual Palette, Defining Your Creative Style.
Your photo. I had to look back. I have the book right behind me. Defining Your Photographic Style.
Defining Your Photographic Style. There we go. Okay. I was close here. I have it open here to the table of contents on the webpage here, but it wasn't showing the title. Oh, there it is. Yeah, Defining Your Photographic Style, which is a title that I found really interesting because that's definitely something that I am concerned with and interested in. It's something that I teach in some of my workshops. I have a workshop actually that I'm teaching at the main media workshops this summer.
Nice.
And I taught the same workshop. Yeah, I taught the same workshop last year. And it's a similar thematic concern. It's called Creative Seeing, Refining Your Photographic Vision. So like right in line, you know, with probably a lot of the stuff that you're covering there.
Totally.
But what was the, and actually before I get into that, let me just tell everybody out there that we are going to be giving away a copy of Brian's book on this episode, not say necessarily on this episode as it airs, but you'll be able to enter on this episode page at thisweekinphoto.com/thefix. I'll give you more details about that at the end of the show, but just realize that you'll be able to, somebody will win a free copy of that from Rocky Nook.
Woohoo!
Woohoo! Hey, freebies. We love them.
Absolutely.
So anyway, especially cool book freebies. What was it that led you, that kind of sparked the idea to sit down and write a book about this topic?
So I kind of referenced just a few minutes ago kind of my sheer terror and like apprehension about writing a book, because one, just the sheer volume of books, photography books, not like coffee table books, not like a, you know, necessarily like an Annie Leibovitz book or kind of a Jay Mazel book, but like a book on creativity type of thing. There's no shortage of them.
Yeah.
And if I were to write a book, I didn't want to write a book just for the sake of it, you know, just to get it to be published.
Mm-hmm.
So it was, you know, my friend Scott Cowan, who's, you know, leads up marketing and publishing at Rocky Nook.
Oh yeah, I know Scott.
Yeah, he was instrumental because we spoke. It was like 2 years ago at Photo Plus or WPPI, I can't remember. But he asked, he's like, "Hey, why don't you write a book with us?" And I was just terrified because I didn't want it to be a flop. So I thought about it, and my wife Nicole has like seven. She's already put like seven or eight books published. Not herself published books, but like with Peach Pit.
Mm-hmm.
And hers are all what do they call, like they're very very they're focused on a specific camera, for example, or a specific like food photography type of thing. And I didn't want to do that. The book that I wanted to write, I really wanted it to be evergreen so that it could be referenced 10 years from now. So
yeah.
So I sat back and I thought about what is it about me? Why did Scott ask me to write a book? Because there are tons of other photographers who are way more successful and have way larger followings and whatnot. And I can't remember if it was with Nicole I was chatting, but someone was like, "Well, it's probably because of your style, you know, my photographic style in terms of how I shoot, how I stylize my photos, which is oftentimes very, I guess, unorthodox, most likely because of my colorblindness, and then also because I write pretty often in a conversational, not colloquial, not like a slangy way, but in a conversational way. So I was like, oh, well, there it is. I'm going to write a book about helping others find their creativity, because that's, I think, the one thing that, if everyone here has a camera, then how does it separate us? There's us. The individual is the one thing that's not a common denominator.
Yeah. Oh, I love the way you put that. That's great.
Yeah. Thank you. That's
almost a little tweetable quote there.
let's make a meme out of it.
There we go. But you know, the thing is that, you know, I don't want to say everybody has a camera these days. Nearly everybody has a camera these days, whether it's, a more conventional camera, you know, an SLR, a compact camera, mirrorless, or even if it's just their phone. And, you know, we all have access to image processing programs from very inexpensive apps on our phone or tablet device, all the way up to, you know, more full featured programs like Photoshop, Lightroom, and some of the plugins that are available for those, you know, processing ecosystems. But, you know, one of the things that I see over and over again, when I teach workshops, is that there's oftentimes that hurdle that people face in terms of translating, you know, what they're photographing into something a little bit more personal and maybe more meaningful to them, something that feels really more that's something that's theirs and not just a picture their camera made.
Exactly.
Because the cameras are so good these days, and, you know, with a modest amount of time investment in learning the basic principles of how things like aperture and shutter speed work together to affect the shot, et cetera, you know, it's not hard to come up with a well-exposed picture, but it's taking it beyond that into that realm of, like, pinning it down and finding your groove, your visual style, that really, that's where it starts to become really satisfying, I think, on a personal level.
Absolutely. Agreed on every single count. And that's the I looked at that, I'm like, so, okay, everything you said is 100% true. This is something that people need to pursue. So how do you lay it out in a book?
Mm-hmm.
So I broke the book down into three primary pillars. There's in terms of areas in which a photographer can invoke their own sense of creativity, their individuality. So you've got the composition, you've got the stylization, and then you've got the method of sharing, how you share it. And that, you know, I kind of, instead of necessarily telling people what they should do, I share through example. This is how I have done things. Mm-hmm. And this is why I've done it this way, type of thing. So the one kind of quote that I kind of, if I ever, you know, I'll let the historians decide, but if there's ever a quote that I can ever be known for that I wrote in there, is like, you know, until it's been photographed by me, it hasn't been photographed.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, and I want people to understand very, very clearly, this is not, that's nothing to be egotistical or like, it's something that, an ethos that I think every single person, because that's what, if you adopt that philosophy, then you can go, if you've never photographed the Brooklyn Bridge, which has been photographed a trillion times by a trillion people, then you can go, you know, you haven't photographed it, so you go create that photo the way you want.
Right, yeah, definitely. You know, there's a quote, and I'm just looking it up now to try to see who made that. Okay, it is who I thought it was. Gary Winogrand, a pretty well-known street photographer, you know, he said something akin to, you know, I photograph because I want to see what things look like photographed.
Yeah.
You know, and that's like, you know, obviously distilling it down to a really simple set of parameters, you know, but that kind of, you know, kind of, I think ties into that concept that you mentioned, that quote, you know, it hasn't been photographed, or if I haven't photographed it, it hasn't been photographed, or what would you say? How'd you say that? What was your quote there?
Until I photograph, it hasn't been photographed until here it is. I just actually went, until it's been photographed by me, it hasn't been photographed.
Right. There you go. And that's, you know, that it's that personal thing. You know, Winogrand said, well, I photograph because I want to see what things look like photographed. But obviously, you know, it's photographed by him, and you know, it's that personal connection that I think really makes it more meaningful for people, you know, to develop that personal style or find a personal style.
Yeah, exactly. And kind of to riff off of that quote. Every chapter of the book, I tried to find a quote that by a photographer or someone who that reflects the topic of the chapter. And for chapter 3, which is called Looking to See, I have a quote by Dorothea Lange, and it says, "The camera is an instrument that teaches people how to see without a camera."
Oh, yeah, that's a great one.
Yeah, so, you know, I think those two quotes really work well together.
Mm-hmm. You know, while we're on quotes, I have to share this one with you, which you may already be familiar with because it's a pretty well-known quote. But one of the things that I found along the way in kind of figuring out what my own personal vision was that I'm really interested in photographs that can be a metaphor for something else, you know, mm-hmm. Visually represent some sort of a concept that might be kind of hard to represent visually, but through you know, whatever analogy and metaphor you can suggest that. So Minor White said that one should not only photograph things for what they are, but also for what else they are. And I love that because, you know, it's like, you know, you can photograph a scene or a subject or whatever, and maybe because of the way you photograph it or just the way it's arranged, it can suggest to people other ideas and other concepts. And that, you know, for me, bringing it back to kind of personal style, that was sort of a key thing. Once I recognized that was something I was always coming back to, that really helped inform me as I went forward with future photographs.
Yep, totally. It's kind of like a photo can be greater than the sum of its parts, based on how you choose to arrange it, and also choose to how you choose to act on it once it's on your computer or your phone. You know, there are, you can make fundamental changes to a photo during post-processing that can lend itself to, you know, what your individual style should look like.
Right. And then the speaking of the post-processing, that's the part of the book that is the stylization chapter.
Correct.
Post-processing and stylization. Right.
Yeah.
And I also really like the fact that you have the kind of like the third pillar that you've kind of identified is the sharing.
Right.
And I think that's not something you would see in, you know, obviously older titles concerned with that topic, because, you know, sharing photographs is really something that's mainly kind of come up in the last 8 to 10 years in terms of, you know, the sort of daily sharing them online.
Yes. Yeah. And that was a difficult section, or, you know, pillar to tackle, because, again, going back to wanting it to be evergreen, I really didn't want to focus on any one particular platform or anything like that, because who knows. But that whole section stems from a quote, and I don't know what happened. I've looked up and down the internet to see who it was attributed to or what the specific quote was, but the general gist of the quote was, "The only bad photo is the one that is never shared." And, you know, take that for, if I could be, you know, what's the word? Paraphrasing that, because I don't remember who said it or what the specific quote was, but there's a lot of validity to that. So if you're going to share a photo, well, you could share it the minimal effort way, where you just upload it and hit share and put, like, you know, nothing with it or what camera and lens used. Or you could take some time and share a piece of yourself with it, you know, and that's since day one, when I first started my blog, that's how I shared. I didn't just share the photo. I wanted to share, even if it's a, you know, two or three lines, but just give a piece of myself with it.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's actually the shortest of all the three kind of main sections of the book. That's the shortest one because I didn't want to be too prescriptive.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I wanted to put it in people's minds, like, you know, engage with, you know, your local community type of thing, or like do a photo walk, or there are many ways to kind of get yourself out there and get your work out there. But if you're going to just share the same way that everyone else is going to share, then you are already in the abyss.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Cause there's so much of it going on that way.
Right. And, you know, I understand that there is a, in that case, there is a kind of a, I don't know if barrier to entry is the right word, but not everyone necessarily, is comfortable writing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But that's not an excuse. There, like, not to say that you know, on one hand, okay, if you want to express yourself with the written word, then use like Grammarly. Meaning, if you want to express yourself, but you're worried about spelling mistakes or improper grammar, there are services out there that can help you with that. So you can't, within reason, you could improve. But I don't think, well, I don't like to write. So I'm like, well, okay, then, you know, when I look at someone, I've gotten to the point, and Sean, I assume you could kind of relate to this. I've seen so many photos online. And let's say you see that new photo by someone, like that spectacular sunset shot, you know, it's just like exposed beautifully. The sky is exploding and they're tack sharp from foreground to background because they used focus stacking techniques. And they're just like, the tonal range is spot on. You look at it, you're like, cool. You hit like, and then you move on. And you more likely than not have no idea who took that photo.
Mm-hmm.
Flip the coin and same photo or even something less than that. But they wrote about, you know, something about themselves or something about getting there or whatever. Okay, now I'm invested in you.
Right.
And so who are you? Oh, and then I'm like, oh, wow, if he did this or she did this, let me click through their profile. Maybe they did more. Cool. Now I'm going to hit like, you know, like follow or send a friend request.
Right, yeah.
And there's
That's a good point. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's
putting a little bit of yourself in the sharing.
Listen, if we established at the beginning of this segment that the one thing that's not common between everyone is yourself, why don't you apply that same principle? If you're applying that to the composition, you're applying that to the post processing. Why aren't you applying it to this sharing component?
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's a good idea. So do you have any, just sort of like quick tips, maybe like, cause I know that you teach workshops around the country now and then. If one of your workshop participants came to you and said, you know, what can I do to maybe, you know, if I'm looking at the pictures that I take and looking at the kind of scenes that I like to photograph, what are some things that I might do to help me kind of pin down or narrow down what my personal style maybe might be or what I might, you know, gravitate to? Because I think a lot of people, you know, again, they like to take pictures. They've mastered the art of exposure and in some senses, maybe even composition, but they're still not sure if they have a personal style.
Right. Totally. So in those situations, the first thing that I would recommend doing a self audit, and you need, sometimes it's, and it sounds basic. And I remember I kind of cover this in the book. And as I was writing, I'm like, is this kind of like too obvious? But what I'll do and what I've done in terms of like researching my own style to kind of like write through, you know, through personal example, is I would go through a Lightroom collection of all the photos that I've shared. I have a collection of every, whenever I finish a photo, like, you know, finish air quotes, and it's ready to share on social, it goes into this collection. And so I go through them and I look through, I do a scan and I make a very deliberate point to stop at the ones that jump out more than others. And then I have a little Evernote and I write the kind of like what I like about it. And when I'm done, I look through and I look to see if there are any sort of common, consistent things across them. Like for me, one of the big things is I love fisheye, but not just fisheye. Fisheye shots that there's the primary element of like the foreground anchor is essentially right up in the frame and super distorted. I like that. Mm-hmm. I also like the Dutch angle or the Dutch tilt a lot, where it makes sense. So, you know, skewed horizon lines type of thing. In terms of stylization, I'm a huge fan of split toning, but not just split toning. There are specific color combinations that I am very fond of based on. So if it's a slight long exposure of a brook or a waterfall and I apply split toning, I find that I'm using a certain color combination for highlights and shadows, as opposed to say an urbex shot, like a grungy HDR shot. And I'll use a different color combination. And so as I get those kind of pieces of information, that kind of starts forming, all right, well, this is looking like my style. And I'm not saying you should do that formulaically, like, okay, I'm going to, you know, super glue my fisheye lens onto my camera and never switch out. But when it's time to, you know, like if I want to build a certain portfolio, I kind of have a better idea of what I should be focusing on.
Right. Yeah. You know, another thing that is useful sometimes, and this falls right in with this idea of a self audit there, or at least, you know, reviewing your images to see, you know, where have I been? And, you know, a lot of times seeing where you've been creatively and photographically, that might give you clues as to where you might be going, because, you know, you might be able to basically discern the traces of a path or a couple of paths in where you've already been, even if you didn't realize you were on those paths at the time. Right. If you have that sort of self audit, you can go, oh yeah, I've been photographing this a lot or this way a lot. Maybe I need to explore that a little bit more.
Absolutely. That's to the totally valid kind of look at the reciprocal of that. It's like, well, maybe I'm, and what's funny in a kind of a different context, I'm like, where's this thing? So the audio podcast won't be able to see it, but I anytime I go shooting, I have this with me, and it's the Garmin Fenix 3. It's a watch. It's a GPS watch. So when I start the shoot, I initiate a GPS track. So it's communicating with GPS satellites, and I make sure that the time on the watch is synced to the time on my camera. When I'm mm-hmm. done, the watch outputs a GPX file, which Lightroom supports, and then it using that synced time code, it applies the GPS coordinates. And then what I'll do is I'll go into the map view in Lightroom and I'll look to see if there's a big cluster of photos in the same spot, that tells me that I've spent way too much time there, because I think an important hallmark, unless you're standing there waiting for a time of day or an animal to come by, I feel that you should be using your feet a lot to, you know, walking around, trying different perspectives. So if I'm standing at the same spot, I'll go to the Lightroom folder, I'll look at the photos, and I'll be like, oh, great. So now I have like 40 of the same photo. Big deal.
Right, yeah. Now, that's a good tip.
Yeah, I mean, people need to... Photography is not a passive thing. You have to be really active about it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and also, I think self-aware in terms of, you know, really... examining the type of pictures you're making, how they make you feel, what you think are your successes, the pictures that you like that other people have made. If you examine, you know, what are the pictures that you're drawn to that other photographers have made that you're totally drawn to those and go, oh my God, that's really cool, I want to do that. Those are all clues for figuring out, you know, how you can maybe, modify your path to maybe move more in that direction.
Yeah, I like the self-aware thing. I think that's totally on point.
You know, I was having a conversation with Jean-Paul Caponigro a few years back, and you know, we were talking, you know, about this sort of similar thing. And, you know, he said that, you know, what he likes to do and what he sometimes suggests for people to do is, you know, kind of do a word association, but with your photographs, where you write down maybe certain words that come to mind when you're looking at your photographs. And that might help you kind of dial into maybe thematically or emotionally what those photographs are about to you and what they mean to you. And what that does is when you're, again, that sort of concept of the self audit is that, you know, when you become more aware of those, because you've taken the time to really look at it and write those terms down, maybe tack them up on a bulletin board or whatever, it kind of, calibrates your awareness, so you are more aware of those potential concepts and image possibilities when you're out with your camera. You already kind of identified them, and so if they pop up, you go, oh yeah, that's that picture.
I couldn't agree more. And as you were saying that, I thought about it, I'm like, oh man, why I should have been so, like I mentioned when I did my self audit, I did in my Evernote, I'm like, and now I'm thinking about it, I'm like, why didn't I use Lightroom keywords? Because I didn't keyword them as such, but I had, you can just, and to John Paul's point, like, just this has been studied far and wide, but like the act of writing something down as opposed to just trying to recall to memory, that act of writing down does some sort of reinforcement. Has an effect on your brain, which is why if I'm out at a restaurant and my waiter or waitress, it doesn't impress me if everyone gives them their order and they don't write it down. I'm not impressed by that. and, you know, like I want them to write it down because I want them by the act of writing it down, they're being conscientious. They're actively listening to me. And then they're kind of transcribing my order onto their pad, and so the same thing in a weird, you know, weird way analogy with photography. Man, I didn't, you know, that was a great show, and I actually now I'm walking away with a cool little thing that I'm gonna try to kind of tag. You know, the only photos I ever tag are ones that I upload to Stocksy, just because you need to do that for stock photography. But I never tag really much of anything else.
Oh, you know, I have a whole category of keywords in Lightroom that I call conceptual keywords. And a conceptual keyword is not really what the image is about necessarily, but it's what the image could be used to represent. Maybe, like, I have a picture I use in some examples in some of my classes of a container ship steaming out underneath Golden Gate Bridge. And it's just taken from the Marin Headlands, looking down on the bridge. So you can see the city in the background. And, you know, there's cars in motion on the bridge and all this. So, you know, that gets the keywords of transportation and global commerce. You know, those are, you know, the picture may not necessarily be about that, but that picture could be used to represent that.
Absolutely.
And then I'll even take it a step further, and some pictures will get even more conceptual. Let's say I see a picture and I think, oh, that picture really represents the concept of isolation or fear or longing or imagination. And I'll just put those in there because I never know. One day, who knows, I might be working with a photo editor and they say, hey, we're doing a story on such and such. Do you have any pictures that could be used to illustrate this concept? If I've already keyworded them with those conceptual keywords, I can just, you know, tap that in and, oh, here's, you know, whatever, 40 pictures that, you know, fit in with this, you know?
Yeah. I'll never, like when I worked at Google, when I worked at On1 before Google, I did a lot of stuff with Seth Resnick, and, you know, Seth has this, he has a whole, like he's really, really invested with Lightroom keywords. And I know he sells these keyword packs that you can ingest into Lightroom.
I'm familiar with those. They're pretty amazing.
Yeah, they are in depth. But I remember him talking about specifically keywords, and he was saying how he remembers using the keyword ecotourism with a photo. I don't remember what the photo was, but ecotourism, this was before it became kind of the, you know, a fad, or not the fad, but it became popular. Like, you know, before it was on the cover of Nat Geo Traveler magazine type of thing.
Before it had a word.
Exactly. And so, you know, that kind of thing is like, you're totally right. The kind of abstract concepts. And you don't necessarily, I wouldn't say that everyone, you know, you should go like, you know, too cerebral on it. But I do think if you look at a photo and do that kind of exercise of like, what three words jump at you right away when you look at it, mm-hmm. I think it's worth capturing. And even if you feel like an idiot doing so, because I do, mm-hmm. you know, sometimes I think too much about what I must look like to the fly on the wall. and that's, again, that's ego, which I hate. I'm telling you, if there was a pill that I would love to take a pill to kill my ego. Cause I don't want, I would love.
You need a fly swatter for that fly.
Oh my God. I need one of those mega sonic, like just like annihilate the fly, you know? So there's no sequel. There's no possible sequel to the fly 2 coming back.
Right. Right. Wow, cool. Well, I know from what we talked about so far, we could just go on and on and on and on and on about this, but I know you've got places to be and I've got places to be. So, I'm going to get to the book giveaway details in just a minute here. But it's been a great conversation so far. I've really enjoyed it. So thanks for stopping by for that.
Thank you. This is definitely one of my favorite conversations I've had about the topic.
Oh, cool. Thanks. So where can people find you out on the interwebs?
Well, my website is the hub. So that's just my last name. It's Matiash.com, MATIASH.com. And then on Facebook, if we talked a bit about my live show. So that's broadcast. If you go to facebook.com/Brian Matiash, so that's BRIANMATIASH. Those are like the two, you know, from my website, you can spoke out to anywhere else and my Facebook page.
Ooh, I like that verb, spoke out to anywhere else. Cool.
It's a hub and spoke. Yeah, that's how your website is your hub.
There you go. No, a new little bit of linguistic flair that I can add into my speech. Thank you very much.
Bring it on.
Right. And I'll have links to Brian's website and his Facebook page, where you can catch his live show, in the show notes. Apropos the book giveaway, so here's the thing. This episode is airing on Tuesday, May 17th. So to win the book, you just need to leave a comment on the page below. And again, that's going to be at thisweekinphoto.com/thefix. Find the page for episode 66 for Brian's show and leave a comment. Tell us a sentence or so about, you know, what do you think your personal style is, or what do you want it to be? And also, if you feel that, you want to share with us, you know, how you might have found what your personal style was, you can do that. Any of the above, you know, it doesn't have to be anything major. And, you know, if you're moved to share a photograph, that's cool, too. And we will select a winner and have Rocky Nook send you a copy of Brian's book. You got 2 weeks to do this. So I will close the entries on Tuesday, May 31st. So one lucky person out there in internet land will win a copy of that excellent book. Sound like a deal, Brian?
Sounds like a deal. Just get ready for some summer reading.
Summer reading. Yeah, cool. Yeah. And summer inspiration too. Yeah. All right, cool. All right. Well, thanks for stopping by, Brian. Again, I do appreciate it. And maybe we'll catch up again sometime and discuss something else on the fix.
Thank you so much, Sean. I would love to. It'd be a great opportunity.
All right, cool. Take care.
You too.
Well, that wraps up another episode of The Fix. Hey, if you are viewing or listening to the podcast on our website, thisweekinphoto.com/thefix. Please subscribe to the show by using the box over on the right side of the page. You can also sign up for our email list to be notified when new episodes are published, and also to get exclusive subscriber bonuses. If you have any comments, feedback, or suggestions for what to cover on future episodes of The Fix, you can get in touch with me directly by using our contact form Just go up to the top of the page and click on the Contact Us menu item. And when that little contact form opens up, make sure you open up the menu in the middle there to specify which show you are providing feedback for. And of course, for the show, that would be The Fix. I'm Sean Duggan. Thanks very much for watching. Catch you next week on The Fix.